Today's program is brought to you by the Dairy Farm Families of Wisconsin, the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board. Did you know that today Wisconsin produces more than 600 varieties, types, and styles of American, international style, and original cheese that win more awards than any other state or country? To learn more, visit eatwisconsincheese.com.
This is Michael Harlan Turkel, host of The Food Scene. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
To a very special LA edition of Snacky Tunes. I'm one half your host, Greg Bresnitz.
I'm your other half, Darren Bresnitz. We are coming from
inside the back of house.
Yeah.
the luxurious back of house.
With Stefan Francois of the Bombay Hospitality Group. Welcome to Snacky Tunes.
Thank you. It's welcome to your offices.
Yes, I know.
Yeah, yeah, but, I mean, through the magic of radio, we could be anywhere.
Yeah.
Yes.
Two Frenchmen living in LA. How did you guys meet?
We met at when Stefan did something that was absolutely amazing called Test Kitchen.
In New York, right?
No, in LA.
In LA.
July 2010. A chef every night, new menu, new cocktail menu, new wine list.
Mm-hmm.
And Francois came with a fantastic chef called Gary Menes. And that's how we met.
Yeah.
Gary Menes, who owns Le Comptoir now in,
In
K-Town, actually.
In K-Town.
At the Normandy Hotel.
Where you guys had just recently spent a lot of time, but we'll get to that in a little bit.
Yes.
Was it partner love at first sight? Did you see him and say, we're going
to
be...
have to ask that to Stefan.
You see him walking?
The idea is that we had a good connection, and the idea was to, in my head, was always to try to find a way along the way to work together.
Do you remember what he said to you that you kind of like stopped and went, maybe there's something here? Or the concepts or ideas?
No, I just like the way, when we did Test Kitchen, the ideas, it was very challenging. We would operate 21 hours a day. Every day we get a new chef. We clean up the walk-in, the bar. So, it was pretty intense. And then François came, and the way he ran his night, because every chef got one night, and so he was running the front of the house for Gary, I was very impressed. And I was like, well, that's I've seen a lot of shitty operators in the last in the last 2 months. And then suddenly working with François was easy. And then his knowledge of the wine and, his, attention to detail, he felt good, yeah.
Yeah, that was a long dinner, I think, Gary did.
It was a long dinner.
9 or 10 vegetarian tasting menu.
So you both got your start back in Paris, right?
Yeah, absolutely. At least me, for the restaurant business.
Right.
Yes, yeah.
You were doing hospitality back there, nightclubs.
Correct, yeah.
What was the Parisian nightclubs?
1998. Oh, the infamous one is called VIP Room.
It still
exists. 1999, the first one in Saint-Tropez.
François, you were doing music journalism.
I was a rock critic for 16, 17 years.
What is the record that you feel got most overlooked as your time as a rock critic?
Oh man, that's a toughest question.
Oh yeah. Man, we don't have enough time.
You should ask about the Desert Island.
But you're both working in Paris. And, what drew you to L.A.? A lot of times people from Europe go to New York.
Yeah.
But you went to the sunny side of the country.
Well, for me, I came on vacation and I decided to stay. So it's love at first sight. I woke up in Malibu at my friend's house in July 2001. And that same exact day, I say, well, I am never going back. So
yeah, I mean, that's sort of not, you wake up on the beaches in Malibu.
I was like, wow, that's where I want to live. So and I was, not married, no kids, nothing. So pretty free at that time, so...
Yeah, move that. And what about with François?
I never felt typically French in that sense, and always wanted to experience other things. And I came here to open an office for the magazine, so Rock and Folk magazine. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, I met my wife in Paris. And the magazine opening thing here didn't happen, but I came nonetheless.
Middle life. And was there like... any particular meal or food experience that kind of opened your eyes to move away from being a rock critic into the food world?
Yes, I can still remember. That was at Chez Panisse at lunch.
Ugh.
It was maybe 2001 or 2002. And I can still taste that pappardelle with goose ragu.
Mm.
And literally, I have to taste right now.
And that was it?
That was it. And I discovered, you have to remember when we moved here, Stefan moved a little, I moved in 97.
Yeah.
97, there was not much here.
No.
Mm-hmm. You have to erase, no cheese, no nothing. You had Wolfgang, and pretty much that was it. And Patina.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the LA food scene has come into its own recently.
Crazy, huh?
But, late 90s,
yeah. Early 2000s. Yeah, nothing like Zabar.
No, right. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. New York has, always been about food. From late 1800s when the French came over and they started doing,
Italians
and the Italians and the Jews, our people coming over, bringing all that food.
Ladies.
Like, it's there. But it took a while to come across. And I remember going to Chez Panisse as well. And you first walk in and you're just like, I've seen this menu before. Yeah. And then you realize, oh, no, wait, it all started here.
Yeah.
Like, you started here, and then you eat it, and you go, I don't, like, all the other menus are at that. And so you're in L.A., and, so if you've been here since the 90s, you've really seen the L.A. food scene evolve. When did you, and now I would say the L.A. food scene is fantastic.
Crazy, huh?
But when did you really start to notice the change, and what changed it, or who changed it?
Well, you have to give back to a lot of chefs, first, like Suzanne Gouin, Luc, definitely. and the careful sourcing of ingredients and produce, and the use of very local ingredients was absolutely key, I think. And it's when LA discovered there was something outside of the city, very close. I mean, Ojai, Ventura County.
Yeah.
Lots of farms, but nobody was using them, then. In 97, I feel like you had Cisco trucks everywhere with bad stuff all around.
Do people just not care?
I mean, people care. I mean, Waters and, those incredible women. I mean, Akasha.
Yeah.
Farmers Market 20-something years ago.
Right.
I think what also made it different is that, it's something called the internet, In LA, people have a lot of money, Hollywood and the music and the films and, billionaires every over, house. But there was no one really interested in chef-driven restaurants. So suddenly you open one, people go, or you open two, people go, you open three, people go. If you look at Test Kitchen 2010, I will tell you that probably 80% of the chefs we had were not very well known, and now they all have a restaurant. It's pretty incredible,
And you got a cut of all that, right? You got a cut.
I did. I sold it. So I can, feed my kids.
That was the beginning of a watershed moment for those chefs to step out from.
I mean, I think so. I think so. It was 2009, 2010, that's when really everything happened,
Yeah.
And were some of the other chefs that did?
With me, Chris Morningstar, that is not tearing with us. But Gary Menes has his own restaurant. Alex Resnick did his own restaurant. Jordan Kahn did Red Medicine. I can go on and on. I can go on and on. I mean, Walter Mensky, he just opened at that time Church State. Now he has Republic and all those restaurants.
Love Republic.
I mean, we can go on and on.
Church State was one of the first ones that really gained notoriety.
Absolutely. I mean, we did 57 chefs in 4 months. It was pretty crazy, and all of them were very much unknown. Most of them were very much unknown.
I mean, because so much of the focus has been New York, Chicago, San Francisco, and I feel LA is just a lot to what you guys are doing as well. Is that what drove you to start your own hospitality group out here?
I just came on vacation and I realized that like Francois said, it's salmon pizza with creme fraiche, it's been the same one for 27 years.
I cannot wait for your salmon pizza restaurant.
But he worked for Wolfgang but it was 27 years ago. It's time. I think people are when people have money, so money was not the problem. People can eat well if they want to, so the idea there was no offering to them. Suddenly we opened the doors to chef driven restaurant with local produces and locally grown grass fed beef, whatever it was. Suddenly people were like, wow, that's amazing. And then California is so healthy that they realized that eating was something that was very important. And so you built it and they will come, right?
Yeah.
So that's what happened. We built it and they came,
And so I just have one question for you, because we have a number of friends who were music guys that have become really big in the natural wine scene. What is it about people who are into music that they can get obsessed with wine? What do you feel the connection is?
I think it's the same kind of life, quite frankly.
The obsession?
I mean, definitely on my side, it's... I always joke that I left one life for exactly the same. restaurant is like the curtain opens, the curtain closes. It's theater. It's you're always on the deadline. I mean, it's just like writing your story for yesterday's editor. And food, wine, it also goes with what we haven't brushed on is that chefs as a new rock stars.
Mm-hmm.
Musicians are into things that are that dense. That are important, I think. Things that make your life, your heart sing, and that is wine, that is food, that is all these things. And there's also the do-it-yourself thing that comes from punk rock. A lot of former punk rockers are into natural wine.
Yeah,
it's unbelievable. I think it's also the same idea of a super esoteric knowledge.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Before we take a quick break, what is your favorite, each of you, your favorite part of the theater? From when the curtain opens to when the curtain closes, what is your favorite part of a day of service?
Oh man, right before it opens.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I like when I'm in the weed. I like when we're running around crazy. It's like, it's intense, you know, your heart is like beating fast and you want to perform well. So that's my favorite part for sure.
Awesome. All right, well, we're going to take a quick break. Got a song from Porches, who played a while back on the show. You're listening to Snacky Tunes here on heritageradionetwork.org.
Man, I wish there was a place that I knew I could always stay.
I guess we haven't really left, but we're here back with Stefan and Francois of the Bombay Hospitality Group. And you guys' first restaurant for the Hospitality Group was Terrine.
Correct. Actually, the first one for me was Faith and Flower.
Faith and Flower.
Yeah, under the name, yeah.
Under the name. And
But the Terrine's the first one together.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. And how did that come to be?
And Chris is great.
Chris is fantastic.
Chris Morningstar.
Chris is the perfect example. When he did Test Kitchen, we said, wow, we have to do something together. And, you know, at that time, he had other plans, I had other plans. And then along the way, we tried to find a location together. It didn't happen. He did other things. And then suddenly he called me and he said, he actually, a week before that, I go with a friend of mine at the LACMA. And I'm like, oh, I really like his food. I missed his food. And then literally a week later, he called me and said, hey, do you want to do a restaurant? So I said, well, let me talk to Francois. And maybe we do it all together. And that was it. Yeah. It was very easy, very, very natural. It felt very natural.
And it happened fairly quickly.
Yeah.
And what was it's a gorgeous space.
Yes.
It's where I celebrated right after I got engaged.
Yes.
Thank you guys
Thank
for having
you.
Us. Shout out to my wonderful fiance.
Fully brings you good luck.
Yes. I would say champagne and cured meats.
Yes.
Secret to a long relationship. But what was the idea behind Terrine? You know, why, you know, whenever, I mean, you're, I guess the goal when you create a restaurant is something that doesn't exist or something that...
Yeah.
Doesn't exist in that area.
The idea is very much, I think Chris was very much, it was very much his idea, you know, when he called, he says, you know, it was what I would like to do. I've been at Patina for so many years, trained classic French, you know, but he says, I don't want to do French food because I'm not French, but I would like to do my take on French food, which we call California Brasserie. And it's very much his passion for food. He likes, you know, I mean, you saw the guy. He's tall, he's big, he's loud.
Oh, yeah. He's a force.
Super fun, yeah. And that's his food, you know. He's like, you know, that's what he wanted to do. He wants to do a crazy croque madame with 5 layers of bechamel. You know, that's what he wants to do.
I mean, it's a rich meal. I mean, I love it.
Oh, no, absolutely.
It's like, but when I get there, it's like, all right,
yeah,
on the
mission,
get ready.
But you know, the funny thing is, we always say the meat is rich, but we have a lot of greens on the menu, but people don't order those. People come for charcuterie, for the fried chicken on the brunch. You know, it's people on a mission. It's like a guilty pleasure.
What as you are building the restaurant, like where does or when does the wine and beverage program come into play? Is it after the menu is set?
Your cocktails, both there and Vivian, are like you go back to like these cocktails that people have forgotten about or have sort of been cast in negative light, and you rejigger them.
I mean, it is Francois' touch. You know?
It came very much at the same time. You know, I mean, for the wine, obviously, it's something that goes with Christmas food, which is, you know, as we said, it's big flavors.
Mm-hmm.
So you're looking for things that match the food, but what I always try to do is things that are true to themselves, you know, true to the terroir, the place they come from people who take care of their land. Not necessarily natural, but at least Le Toisonné, or just people who take good care, good steward of the land. As for the cocktail program, Ryan Wainwright was the first person I talked to after talking to Stefan. I actually threatened to kill him. First, if he was saying anything, and he was not considering the job, because I worked with him at Tasting Kitchen, where he was bartender in second, and the guy had so much potential, a palate that was absolutely incredible, of great purity, and his vision of what a cocktail should be was exactly what we wanted to do, which is put the spirit first, all the bullshit second.
Mm. Yeah.
You know?
But I would just say Tasting Kitchen was my first meal that I had in LA when we started coming back here, that like truly, yeah, again, dish I can remember, the lasagnette
with the bolognese,
which the only correct bolognese in South
America. I mean, I think about that.
Yeah,
that dish.
Pasta. We ate there.
We don't have enough time to talk about that.
It just has to be said.
We should go and get one.
One of the, I have to say, one of the best meal that had Torino was the Coachella pop-up.
Ah, yeah.
Which was crazy to see the food that Chris and your team was putting
outside,
up.
Yeah.
Outside in the desert.
They didn't sleep for days. Days.
Seems to be a pattern with the people who
I know. Maybe for different reasons.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, if you want to talk about, like, I mean, years ago, the idea of having that level of restaurant at Coachella, and I mean, and there was a line. I mean, people were, like, so excited to sit down and have a full meal.
It is. I mean, you know, you have to think, you know, Lav Nation, our partners there, you know, they spend over $250,000 just to set up the restaurant, you know.
I know.
It's crazy money. I mean, it's just an amenity, you know. They want people to be able to eat good food because they have a certain level of clientele, and they know that food will bring people. It's a funny thing, but they were very convinced that bringing better food, they will manage to have more people coming to Coachella, which I understand. Yeah.
Or also, I think from an event side, just more people on site. I can get a really nice meal. I'm just going to go earlier and sit there, which then adds to
Coachella. More, you know, the story. It's so hot. People want to go at 4 or 5 p.m. But then suddenly you can have lunch. You go at noon. You know.
I mean, it was a much needed break to get off my feet and like be taken care of and not just eat something where I'm like, oh, I feel.
Yeah, you feel gross. You know. Yeah. Free days.
So the next restaurant. I mean, it's so funny. You guys opened up two restaurants within 3 weeks.
Two or three weeks.
Which I, when I was seeing it and you were announcing it on Instagram, I thought I had read it wrong. But
you know what they say? Do not do this at home.
Yeah.
That's what it is. Never do it again.
Yeah. So the next one is Vivian.
Vivian was first and then Hanjib second.
Vivian is gorgeous.
Thank you.
How did that project come about? Because, you know, being set in a hotel is always a bit of a roll of the dice.
Yeah. It is. You know, I mean, Michael was my chef at Fef and Flower, and he wanted to do something a bit more intimate, a bit more his food, if he had the belief that his food would maybe meet his audience better if he was in Beverly Hills. He was something maybe a little bit older population, you know, more people that travel more, and, you know, maybe something more like that. So he for many months he was saying, you know, I would love to have the opportunity to do a smaller restaurant, to maybe go back, you know, west. And so you know, one day got the opportunity, you know, and then he, you know, we discussed and he went to see the place and he fell in love with it. And
did you feel that you had to tailor the original vision to fit within the space that they're given, the fact that it's in a hotel, or were you just given free range to do it?
It actually fit perfectly.
I mean, it's, yeah.
We're always attracted by structures, architecturally speaking. And I think it really fit the architecture of the menu that Michael had in mind, quite frankly, and the style of cooking.
Yeah, the good thing with Michael is he didn't really try to make his food fit the structure. He just cooked whatever he wanted to cook. We let him cook whatever he wanted to cook. Mm. And it just happened that, you know, the elegance of the place and the elegance of his food meet in the middle.
I mean, it's elegant. With the pool right in the center at night.
It works super well. But if you look at the decor that Kelly Westler did, it's, you know, it's like a New Mexico style, you know, French-Italian Riviera, but it's nothing to do with the food. But when you go there, it actually works very well.
It's very magical.
Absolutely.
Like the rest of the world sort of fades away.
You open the door and you're somewhere else.
Yeah.
Like, you're not in LA. It's like, yeah, it's really special. Yeah.
And that's
such
what I was...
an iconic building.
Yeah. And we're actually now currently... So then 2 weeks after that, where we currently are, is your Korean barbecue joint, which I would say would probably, if someone had to say, all right, take a guess at what the next cuisine they're going to open, Korean barbecue would have not been my choice. What made you decide to open up that type of restaurant?
It's actually close to be the first one, quite frankly, because I remember the first time I met Stefan and we talked about Terin was in Cape Town in a Korean barbecue.
Mm.
And towards the end of the meal, I said, well, you're not very good friend with Chris, how do you feel about Korean barbecue project? I said, I'm in.
Hmm.
Yeah, Korean is very special, you know. It's the beauty of what we do is you don't, you know. I met Chris, I don't know, many years ago, and we were been friends since. And it was his dream, you know. He wanted to open a Korean barbecue restaurant, so it's just the opportunity, you know. Us as restaurateur, we are the messenger of the chef, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We never say, oh, we're gonna do a Korean, or let's find a chef, or no. It's, oh, we have a chef who wants to do that, and let's make it happen with him.
Let's talk about that role for a second as a restaurateur. What do you feel like the best idea or the ideal of a restaurateur? Like, what is your job in life in relation to chefs?
Our job is very much to execute the vision of the chef and put it in you know, in a sense that it becomes a business.
Mm.
You know, for chefs, it's not really a business. They want to cook the best food they can.
Of course.
Not think about food cost and, you know, the story, labor cost. And our job is to make it fit within the parameters of running a successful business.
What is...
And nurture in
And what is, like, advice that you have for people who are becoming restaurateurs on how to handle potentially, like, the chef and like an uncompromising vision?
Yeah, you know, it's hard. I think it's about hoping for the best. Because, you know, I have so many stories that happened to me. I'm 22 years doing this job. I have good and bad stories. You know, I have people that change when they become famous. I have people that were lying to me, making me hear what I wanted to hear, and then as soon as we open, things change. I mean, I'm sure Francois the same thing. I think what you have to is, like, in deep in your guts, do you think this person is a good person?
Yeah. Well, it seems like
that there's no net.
Pardon?
There's no net.
Yeah.
No net. But I think, you know, if I would advise a restaurateur, I would say, do the smallest restaurant you can to start.
Mm-hmm.
It's great advice.
That's great advice.
That's really great advice.
Well, I want to thank you guys.
Thank you very
much. Also, Christine, thank you. Shout out. She's great.
Yes, oh, she's the best, of course.
She's the best.
I know, we love her.
And where can people go to find more restaurants on you guys, the restaurants, things like that?
As of our restaurants?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you can go to Bombay hospitalitygroup.com and, you know, Instagram and Twitter, plenty of those. We just want to make people happy.
Great.
And Frenchy Foodie.
Yes.
And Mr. Francois.
Yes, rockstar tour and restaurant tour.
Last question for Francois. In your discovery of Korean barbecue, what beverage did you discover that you would recommend that totally surprised you?
Sake bomb is not an answer, okay?
Soju bomb.
Soju bomb.
I would say sherry, maybe.
Sherry.
Okay. Mm. Well, bulgogi and sherry.
Yeah, I like
there
that.
There we go.
All right. Well, we'll
thank you guys.
Yeah, thank you. We'll be right back after a quick meeting.
Peace in the world.
Yes. Peace in the world and love to everyone in Paris.
Oh, fucking best closing.
Yes. Right. Okay. Thanks. Welcome back to Snacky Tunes. I was just Mahogany playing live last year. Before we get into the musical portion of the show, a big congratulations to Stefan and Tareen, who won Eater Awards this past week. Tareen for the So Hot Right Now Award and the Stefan for the Empire Builder. Congratulations.
back in April 2013, we had a great band called Neighbors on Snacky Tunes, and we are happy to welcome Noah, formerly of Neighbors, now of Total Makeover, back to the show. Welcome.
What's up? Hi.
So what happened?
Oh, with Neighbors?
Well, yeah. Let's start there.
Yeah. You know, I think I've been doing that project for a while, and I kind of got to a point with it where I was like, we had done two full lengths, two EPs, and I sort of was like going back to writing new songs, and they kind of sounded, you know, like the logical next step, but it didn't really feel super exciting. And so, I don't know, I just was kind of like, maybe stupidly, but for better or for worse, I was just like, I'm going to just like knock that sandcastle down and build a new sandcastle. It just felt like the right time, the right thing to do.
How did you knock it down?
I just stopped. I was just like, oh, we're not going to do this.
Like, did you have a farewell show? Or?
Our last show, funny enough, so our last show was in the last month of Glassland shows, last December.
Okay.
We played, like, a show there, but it was our last show, but I didn't know it was our last show at the time. We didn't, like, announce or make a big thing. And then it was kind of just like, you know, no ceremony, no nothing. I just sort of, like, felt like working on something else and digging into something else and...
Huh, that feels like very like on 2014, 2015 to like to not make a big deal out of something, to end a project like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it didn't feel like making a big deal out of it. I didn't feel very sentimental about it. I felt really like I just want to move on to the next thing, and I didn't feel bad about it either. I just was like so ready to like just like start something new.
What was it that you like really recognized that was like, okay, it's time to put this down and start something new?
I think it was when I started writing new songs in that sort of vein, and it didn't feel like, it felt like I was just doing the same thing again.
Yeah.
And that just was like, I would listen back to things and they just didn't feel exciting. And that was not, I felt like that wasn't probably good artistically.
You're like, time to write a neighbor song. You're like, oh, this doesn't do it for me anymore.
Yeah, like, and they were like completely serviceable. I still have a few songs from that period of writing that haven't come out or anything. And, you know, and they were, it was fine, but it just felt like I needed to push a little harder. And especially at that specific time, it was like, okay, like, you know, like, let's just try a little harder. Let's like be a little bit more uncomfortable.
Were there any neighbor fans who are like, dude, what the fuck?
Yeah, I mean, I think some people, the thing is that Total Makeover came pretty quickly on the heels. So I feel like it was like, it wasn't like leaving anybody wanting for stuff. I think people were a little confused. And then especially when they heard the new stuff, they were like, oh, okay. And you just like, you have to just be okay with people being confused. But like, no, it's okay. Like, I feel good about this.
How was the rest of the band's reaction?
It was fine. I mean, I think people understood, you know, Neighbors always operated in a way where like I sort of was like alone in my room doing my thing for long periods of time. And then everybody else would sort of come in to play the live shows. And then, so they were kind of used to me sort of like going away in my room for a little while and coming back to them with like, hey, I have this idea for this thing. And then they're just kind of being like, okay. So they were pretty nice about it. They were pretty good about it. And a lot of the people who were playing with Neighbors at the time are playing with Total Makeover now. So
any crossover, like do you bring any Neighbors songs into the Total Makeover set?
Not a one.
It's really just, that's it.
That's it.
Clean break. Well, it's just you today.
Just me today.
Because it's a pre-Thanksgiving and everybody's gone. But let's hear a Total Makeover song.
Okay, cool.
Gotcha. What are you going to play for us?
The first song I'm going to play is called Self-Destructive. And
really?
There's a few things. All of the songs I'm going to play today are giant bummers, and which is going to be good. And B, it's the one thing about Total Makeover is there's a lot more guitar, so it's easier to just do it by myself in a situation like this. So this one's called Self-Destructive. And it's a little bit of a bummer. This is like the happiest one of the three. So
we're going to do like Downward Spiral to just Oblivion.
It's going to go like, this is the happiest one, and the next one is going to be real bad. And then the third one's like kind of in the middle.
Okay. Oh, okay. So we'll end somewhere in between.
On a sort of positive note.
Okay, great.
Kind of, you tell me when we get there.
I'll let you know. Yeah, okay.
Here we go. This year, it kicked me around, and I'm feeling self-destructive, and I'm feeling weird. There's not a lot that I'm sure of now, but I'm sure that this means something. I'm here, I'm kicking around,
and I'm feeling low and overwhelmed, and I'm feeling weird. There's not a lot to wonder about, 'cause I'm sure this means something. And I spend my days searching for you, searching for you, searching for you. Some nights you get kinda lost when you're feeling unproductive, and you're feeling weird. You got a lot to worry about, and I know it isn't nothing. And I spend my days searching for you, searching for you, searching for you. I spend my days searching for you, searching for you, searching for you.
Yeah, bummer.
It's a bummer.
Yeah, it's a bummer. How has the songwriting process changed for Total Makeover from Neighbors, or has it?
Yeah, I mean, I still go in just like trying to do something that makes me feel excited to be working. And so in that way, it's the same. I wanted it to be more guitar heavy, and I wanted it just because I was like, I've always played guitar, and Neighbors was really kind of more synthy thing, but I just felt inspired by guitar again, I guess. And then, I don't know, I wanted it to be more lyrically, like, personal and immediate and kind of just, like, with, like, when, I don't know if this is other people's experience, but I feel like when I made, like, synthy poppy music, it was kind of, like, it lent itself well to one kind of lyrical style, but not well to another kind, and so I felt like doing something that was a little bit more sort of, like, raw or dark or, like, kind of aggressive, like, lent itself better to the kind of lyrics that I wanted to write, so it's different and it's the same. Stupid.
Did something bad happen to you recently?
It was like all this writing came at the end of just a year that had a lot, saw a lot of change.
Yeah.
And so I was just sort of reflecting on that.
But nothing like too terrible.
Nothing worse than has ever happened to anybody else. And you know, like not at all.
And do you bring the band members in at an earlier time now? Or is it still just like, this is my songs and like, you know, you're going to play this part, you're going to sing these vocals.
Yeah, it's kind of still like that, but I think like the drummer comes in when we're recording first. Like I do all the demos, and then the drummer comes in, he records to the demos, and then I kind of go away and record everything else on top of that. But I think it's never like, I don't like dictate. Once we start playing live, it's like, these are the parts that I wrote, but if you hear something better, play something better. It's like, you know, I try to keep it like light and fun for everybody.
I mean, it's interesting to start, I mean, quote unquote, start over. Are there any lessons that you learned from Neighbors that are helping like navigate Total Makeover?
Every single thing. Yeah, like when I think about when Neighbors first started and it was such a shit show all the time, like just like constantly. And we didn't know anything, you know, and I didn't.
Constant Shit Show is a pretty good band name, too.
Yeah, seriously, that'd be the next
I heard they're opening for you at St. Vitus.
They are, yeah. I mean, I learned so many lessons about like how to put out music the right way and sort of like, you know, kind of, I think the most important thing is to just have like intent behind everything you do and know why you're doing it and like not get overexcited and not lose sight of like, of sort of like why, the important parts about why you're doing it and the non-important parts and like compartmentalizing those.
Is there something of example for neighbors where you lost sight of it, that you're like, maybe that wasn't that important, or I wish we could have done this better?
Yeah, totally. I mean, like, for instance, like, you know, I would never just like throw a song up on SoundCloud now and like post it on like Facebook or something and be like, hey guys, like, listen to my new song. Like, you want to get, if you worked really hard on something, it's like, and especially in like a time where like the internet is so, everything's so quick, and it's like, so you put it up and then it's gone, and then you, you know, put something up and it's gone. I think it makes sense to really take your time with releasing things, release them the right way, try to get like a publication that you respect and you admire to do a premiere for you, and really sort of give things the maximum impact so that it feels like it has a weight to it that like matches the importance that you put on like the, you know, your creative output. And it just, like, I think for everybody else feels that way too, more than just like, hey, here's like this thing that I made.
And with that thinking in mind, like the first, I mean, year-ish of Total Makeover, like, do you, how do you see the difference between that and, you know, maybe, or what, how do you see the difference in the first year of the band?
Oh, it's night and day. I mean, like, our first show was good or like better. Like, the first neighbor show was a disaster, an unmitigated disaster. And we used like backing track when Neighbors first started, and I didn't know how to do it right. So like, we didn't have a drummer, but we had six people. And before our song started, I can't believe I'm going to admit this, but it was a long time ago, you'd hear through the PA system, like the crowd would hear, we would hear, it would go like, and then the whole band would start playing. And like our second show, somebody came up to me and was like, dude, your band's good, but you got to lose that like count in for everybody. Like, you know, with Tomega, we had a thing, and I knew how to do it a little bit. And like, you know, we released an EP and we released a video, and we did, you know, we did it in a more grown up way.
For Total Makeover.
For Total Makeover, yeah.
All right, let's hear like the bummerest of
this bummer. Is the boss bummer.
This is the bummer. This is, okay, this is like,
we're going down.
Like hide the knives type.
Yeah, vibes. Exactly. Okay. Yeah, totally.
What's it called?
It's called New England Highway.
Oh. Yeah. I mean, just alone.
Yeah, right?
Okay. All right.
Okay, here we go. To some mixtape you made when you were 16. Spend the afternoon in the place where you were from. Climb to the top of the jungle gym. Look over the trees at the setting yellow sun. Just like that, it's over. Some New England highway with summer to be. Our thoughts are full of heaviness, our phones are out of batteries. Spend a couple nights in the room where you grew up, reading through old letters from your boyfriend. Pink and purple walls and some out of tune guitar. Just like that, we're older. I am begging for relief. Begging for relief.
All right.
Right?
You're gonna, yeah. At least you'll bring
do
it
you
back.
Need a Xanax?
Yeah, jeez. Perfect winter music, though.
Yeah, totally. I like bummer music.
Yeah, I like bummer music in the winter.
Yeah.
Because I think you're just going to go for it, just like...
That's not a summer jam.
That's not... You're not, like, driving with the windows open with, like, your friends or partner listening to that.
Yeah, not
at all. Well, I guess maybe you are and you know that it's the end.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Or maybe that you listen to that and then you write a song like that.
Yeah, if you listen to that in a car, quietly, silently with your partner... It is over for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unless the mixtape they made was really good.
Yeah, for sure.
My brother just moved out to LA and took my mom's old car, and it's got a tape deck. So he has like all of our old mixtapes from like high school and everything. It's pretty awesome.
That's exactly what that like. That song is like very, very much a thing that happened, and that was what it was. Is like I was visiting somebody's hometown and driving around in like their high school car,
yeah.
And so all the tapes were in there, and just like listening to their like the mixes that they made like forever ago. It's really funny. It's very telling.
Yeah, you're just like, oh, geez.
You're just like, well, it was pretty. It was relatively decent considering, but it's like it's totally like, man. If you found all the mixes I made when I was 16, they would just be all like pop punk songs.
Yeah. Which is fine. It's of a time. You might not know better.
Yeah, I definitely didn't know better.
You were telling me earlier that you had a good food story about almost eating live shrimp.
Yeah.
And I would like to hear that.
It's a good story. So, so I have a friend at work, and we like to, every once in a while, we like to go out to just like fancy meal. She's like a really good friend of mine, but a very polar opposite sort of person. And so she's like, she's a fancy lady and she likes to eat fancy food. So we go and we eat fancy food together. And when Sushi Nakazawa was opening, you know Sushi Nakazawa,
yeah.
Obviously. When it was opening, you know, she was really excited about it. And we both like put ourselves on this mailing list to get an email when they were taking reservations. So one day I just get an email and it's like, hey, Sushi Nakazawa has reservations. And so I just booked it really quickly. And she was like, oh, dude, I'm not free that night. And I was like, oh, shit, that sucks. Well, I'm going to go. So I went to Sushi Nakazawa. So I took my friend Brian, who's actually the bass player for Total Makeover. And he's a funny guy. And, you know, we get there and we're like sitting next to like Jesse Eisenberg or something. It was like the first week that they were open. Mm. And it was ridiculous. And Brian's like, dude, we got to go for it. We got to get like the sake pairing with the whole meal and stuff. And I'm like, okay. And he's a big drinker, but I'm a little bit of a lightweight maybe. And so like halfway through the meal, I was like hammer slammered because they kept bringing out more sake. And I'm eating all this delicious sushi and I'm really drunk and I'm really happy. And it's really nice. And then Nakazawa, you know, the chef, he puts down like a live shrimp in front of me. Like presumably, I guess, in hindsight, to show it off, to just be like, this is what you're about to eat.
Like when they present the steak at a restaurant, they're like, oh, like you would never eat that raw steak. They're like, we're going to cook this
for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he presents the shrimp, which is alive and just like wriggling. And he kind of like turns his attention to something for a second. And I was like, oh, I guess I'm supposed to eat this. I was like, well, when in Rome. And I like go to grab up my chopsticks and pick it up. And he like catches me out of the corner of his eye, Nakazawa. And he like turns around and he runs over and he like grabs it out, like just like at the last second, out away from me. And he's like, no. He's like, I have to make this. It's like, so ready. Can you imagine if I had actually done it?
I wonder what raw, I mean, obviously like raw chicken is, you know, you would never do that. You know, beef tartare is raw beef, but I wonder like what comes with like raw shrimp.
I think if there was no bacteria in it, it would have probably been fine. I think the problem would have been like the antennae and the feet wriggling around
and
in my mouth.
And the poop chute, too.
Yeah.
You got to clean that out.
Yeah, there was...
Probably would have been enough in there that you would have just... Like, you would have been unhappy.
I think everyone would have been
yeah,
unhappy.
Yeah, it would have been, like, yeah. Not... You never... Maybe I'm not at the part of the world where, like, you hear about raw shrimp.
Yeah, no.
Okay, that is a good story. So, what's coming up? I know you have a St. Vitus show.
Yeah, so, yeah, for the year, we're just winding down. Kind of, we put out a video, like, last week for that first song that I played, which was cool. And then, on December 1st, we're playing at St. Vitus with this band Spectre and this band Slow Thrust. They're awesome.
Okay.
And that's going to be really fun. I'm looking forward to that. That will be our like last show of the year, and then.
But like not last show ever.
No, not
like
last
not
show
not
ever.
A trend of like playing last shows of the year and be like, eh, fuck this.
No. This will be just the last show for the year, and then I'm writing again a lot, and so we'll be back better than ever at the beginning of next year.
Awesome. Well, I want to make sure that we get one more song in, mm-hmm. But thank you to Stefan and Francois. Congratulations again on your. awards. Shout out to Darren, who is going to meet up with me and his fiance in Philadelphia on Tuesday. Oh, Thanksgiving plans? You're staying here, right?
Friendsgiving. I'm going to make a pie. I'm going to make some stuffing. I'm going to make some cranberry sauce. Kind of a grab bag.
Wait, can you make stuffing without making the turkey?
Yeah, there's different ways to do it, but for sure, like, you don't have to stuff it. I'll probably just make it, like, in a pan.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
I'm more of a purist.
Yeah, for sure. You want it, like, from the bird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or, yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
And speaking of Thanksgiving, we will not be here next week, but we will be playing the interview we did with our mom from last year, which is a really amazing episode. It'll probably come a little bit late in prepping, but still, you know, if you want to listen to her tips, you can search for Gloria Bresnitz or Mom Bresnitz. I can't remember how we tagged it. Big shout out to Ornella and peace in the world, as Stefan so eloquently said. You're going to bring the bummer levels back to medium.
Medium bummer levels. So this song...
Oh, wait. Where can people find you, watch your videos, get a hold of you, book you?
Sure. Just go to TotalMakeoverBand.com and then pretty much just link to our Facebook.
I can't believe Total Makeover was not taken.
Can you believe... I know, right?
I can't.
It was a long time deciding on a name, and I only decided because we had a show and I had to decide on something.
Do you remember what your runner-up was?
Oh, there were so many. I don't even remember which... And, like, I might be too embarrassed. I feel like next time I have a band, I don't even know. Slippery Wieners.
Yeah. Also playing for you at St. Vitus.
Yeah.
What's the name of this last mid-bummer song?
So this song is now, I just wrote it. It's like still not even, I don't know if it's 100% done. First time here, folks, okay, on Snacky Tunes. So it's either called Milestones or Loser of the Year, and I can't decide.
All right, well, it was good to have you back.
Thanks, man. Good to be here.
Thanks for coming, and we'll see you guys in a couple weeks.
I just want to look like someone who is good at everything. The work that you put into it is worth something, they said, but that's just it. It's sort of hard to say what's one thing or the other. Either way, you get exhausted and deflated. Everyone says it's okay, but what do they know? Milestones are overrated. Our souls are paper thin, we're running out of clever thoughts. It's getting old, we are in empty beds, floating down a river all alone. I hate to break it to you, kid, but you are never going home. And still you try and try to find another way. Till you die when they look you in the eye. You wanna climb up on a ledge, tape your last wishes to the fridge. Well, I don't wanna think about it, I don't wanna think about it, I don't wanna think about it, I don't wanna think about it. I should feel ashamed, but somehow I don't feel ashamed. I feel an overwhelming nothing. I feel nauseous and disgusting. Feel lightheaded and estranged from life. Feel lonely and insane. Feel like watching television for eternity until I shrivel up. If God is smiling on you, he must be smiling on me too. Can you admit that makes no sense? Not even for a second. I ask you how you are, you're stressed. Ask about your day, a mess. I ask you what you plan. You said you're settling the second best. And still you try and try to find another way. Till you die when they look you in the eye. I know it's hard to hear, but you're the loser of the year. And I don't wanna talk about it, I don't wanna talk about it, I don't wanna talk about it, I don't wanna talk about it. If I was you, well, I would run. If I was you, yeah, I would run. So far away from me, so far away from me. If I was you, yeah, I would run. If I was you, well, I would run. So far away from me, so far away from me. If I was you, well, I would run. If I was you, well, I would run so far away from me, so far away from me, and start again.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.